President Trump will not give the violence a pass. He will restore order where the Democrat governor and the Democrat mayor are unwilling to admit that they have lost control of their city.
A spokesperson for President Trump says he will not change his decision to send armed federal police into an American city. It's Wednesday, July 22nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, more companies worldwide are saying their COVID-19 vaccines can help end the pandemic. China is battling the worst flooding it has seen in decades. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Congressional Democrats condemned the Trump administration Monday, calling for an immediate investigation into the use of federal law enforcement officers to arrest peaceful protesters in the northwestern U.S. city of Portland, Oregon last week. But President Donald Trump defended the practice, saying some U.S. cities have lost control of protests over the death of George Floyd in police custody in late May. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
In Portland over the weekend, escalating tensions. Protesters massed around police buildings, some committing vandalism and briefly setting a police building on fire. Before everyone fled the area amid warnings from law enforcement. That civil unrest coming as congressional Democrats demand answers on reports peaceful protesters in Portland are being arrested by unidentified federal authorities. President Trump defended that federal intervention Monday.
We have more federal law enforcement than I can tell you in Portland. They've done a fantastic job.
But local authorities say they don't need federal help.
Your presence here isn't wanted. It's not needed.
Federal assistance is making mostly peaceful protests worse, according to the state's governor.
It's like pouring gasoline on a fire.
A group of self-described mothers formed a human wall Sunday to protect protesters from federal tactical units. And Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib vowed on Twitter she would protect her own city of Detroit after Trump said federal authorities may be needed to address rising violence in other U.S. cities.
Put down your need for violence.
Local religious leaders are planning a peace march to try to calm tensions, even as the state of Oregon sues multiple federal agencies for what it says was the illegal detention of U.S. citizens. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. At a time of heightened tensions with China, Indian Navy warships have held a joint exercise with the United States Navy in the Indian Ocean. Beijing is reported to be in the final stages of approving a $400 billion economic and security deal with Tehran. Broken levees left over 10,000 people stranded in eastern China Tuesday as flooding across the country becomes more severe. Two Taliban attacks in northern Afghanistan's Kunduz province early Monday killed at least eight Afghan security personnel. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. Oregon's Attorney General is suing the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. VOA's Jason Patinkin spoke with Amnesty International researcher Brian Kastner in Buffalo, New York, about what's taking place as President Trump contemplates sending federal agents to other cities.
We're watching a few things in Portland. One is arbitrary arrest and arbitrary detention from federal officers that pull up to a crowd and put people in a van and take them away. Second one is the use of these less lethal weapons, how they're using tear gas, how they're using pepper spray, how quickly that they use those two. And then also the use of kinetic impact projectiles, as they're often called, these 40 millimeter rounds. The one case where a person was really significantly injured, he was standing in the street. He had his hands up. He was holding a speaker above his head when he was shot in the face. And if you're shot in the face or head, it can kill you. It can cause life-changing injuries. The third thing that we're watching that we've seen very recently is some medics being picked up and beaten and harassed. And these people are, you know, identified by red crosses on their backpacks or on their shirts. They're volunteers. They're not part of any particular organization, but you see them in protests around the world, people who show up and just want to help whoever happens to be injured. And we've seen some videos now of these medics, you know, just being harassed, beaten, chased away from the protest areas by camouflaged officers that we assume are federal, but hard to know when they're not identifying themselves and not marked.
Looking specifically at these arrests by camouflaged men, what was your initial reaction to seeing those videos?
My initial reaction would be that in another context, they look like disappearances or kidnappings. And in Oregon, I mean, there is a history of far-right groups dressing up in body armor and camouflage and carrying many of the same weapons. And so I think when protesters are saying that, you know, people dressed and armed a certain way come and get them, and they're not read their rights in the United States, they have Miranda rights, they're called, that police need to identify themselves and say why they're under arrest. And so when people are simply picked up, I think it's reasonable to ask, well, who is the group picking me up? And it's taken a few days for journalists to be able to figure out who some of these organizations are.
Now, these federal agents who Trump has deployed are supposedly there to protect a federal courthouse, which has been vandalized by protesters. Is that justification for the use of force that we've seen from these federal agents?
So no matter what their mandate is from the federal government and what they're supposed to protect or how far out from a building their jurisdiction goes, none of that to me is as important as the fact that the mandates around use of force and what is excessive and what isn't, and the fact that excessive use of force is unlawful, that is the important thing. So whether they're inside a federal building, outside of a federal building, those use of force guidelines apply no matter what. And putting graffiti on a wall is not justification for use of force, for, you know, for shooting somebody in the head with a less lethal 40 millimeter round. The fact that it's past curfew is not a justification for shutting down a protest and calling it a riot. It's not like your human right to freedom of assembly or your human right to protest goes away because of some paint on a wall or because a certain hour on the clock was hit.
Last of all, the authorities in Portland and the authorities in Oregon have told the federal forces to leave. They've demanded that the Department of Homeland Security and the Trump administration pull these federal agents out of Portland and out of Oregon. But the Trump administration and the Department of Homeland Security have refused. What do you make of this?
Yeah, that's very worrying. And I would say in other contexts or in other countries and other parts of the world, when local security forces potentially are getting ready to clash with federal security forces, that's when really social order can break down and there can be a really big problem. So in other countries, you know, this would cause us grave concern. It causes us the same concern in the United States. And if we're in a position where the Oregon National Guard feels in conflict with the Border Patrol or other federal agents, that is just a real recipe for trouble. And you know, we would urge, you know, the government to sort itself out and not put any of the security forces, or more importantly, the citizens on the street, to be put in the position between these groups.
VOA's Jason Patinkin speaking with Amnesty International researcher Brian Kastner. Happening now in Asia, passengers of China-bound flights must provide negative COVID-19 test results before boarding. That according to China's Aviation Authority, as the government looks to further reduce the risk of imported coronavirus cases amid increased international travel. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We continue on VOA Asia. With over 14.7 million confirmed novel coronavirus cases and nearly 610,000 fatalities, researchers are reporting progress in the race to develop a safe and effective vaccine against the disease. Two different experimental vaccines, one developed in a joint venture between Britain's Oxford University and British-Swedish drug maker AstraZeneca, the other by Chinese biotech firm CanSino Biologics, have produced strong immune responses in late-stage human trials, that according to two peer-reviewed studies published Monday in the British medical journal The Lancet. Meanwhile, U.S. drug maker Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech also reported positive progress Monday on their vaccine candidate. The vaccine developed by the joint Oxford-AstraZeneca partnership is receiving the most attention, with the company having signed agreements with many governments to supply its vaccine if it's provided to be effective and granted regulatory approval. The company is already committed to making 2 billion doses. Monday's news comes a week after U.S.-based biotech firm Moderna announced the vaccine developed by researchers at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease had also produced strong immune responses in its late-stage human trials.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. South Korean epidemiologists have found that people were more likely to contract the new coronavirus from members of their own households than from contacts outside the home. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. Vast swaths of China have been inundated by the worst flooding in decades along the mighty Yangtze River, with residents piling into boats and makeshift rafts to escape a deluge that has collapsed flood defenses and turned their homes into waterways. Heavy rains since June have left at least over 100 people dead and missing, forced nearly 15 million people to be evacuated from their homes in July alone, and caused billions of dollars in economic losses, according to the government. Authorities are particularly concerned with Poyang Lake, China's largest freshwater lake in hard-hit Jiangxi province. Water levels there have hit historic highs, prompting an effort by more than 100,000 soldiers and other personnel to rescue residents and shore up dikes and levees to prevent worse flooding. Dramatic improvement is not expected anytime soon. Fresh rains far upstream have caused a rapidly increasing inflow to the reservoir created by the massive Three Gorges Dam, that according to state media citing authorities. The government has so far said that the dam can handle the increased load. Critics say the summer flooding threat has worsened over the decades, due in part to rampant overdevelopment and poor water conservancy policies, such as overbuilding of ill-advised dams and levees. When Chenada Hiran was a child, strangers would urge her to lighten her skin. Today, the Indian student is leading a campaign against whitening creams as global anti-racism protests highlight the obsession with fair complexions for many in Asia. Multinationals have long profited from sales of whitening creams, face wash, and even vaginal bleaching lotions by advertising the message that beauty, success, and love are only for pale-skinned people. Unilever made $500 million from Fair and Lovely sales in India last year, according to Bloomberg. The 22-year-old Hiran recently launched an online petition against Fair and Lovely. The campaign achieved its first victory when cosmetics giant Unilever dropped the word fair from its popular Fair and Lovely skin lightening cream. L'Oreal and Johnson & Johnson announced similar initiatives. Many associate pale skin with wealth and beauty, a prejudice bolstered by Bollywood films, which rarely make darker complexion women the star and frequently portray successful city dwellers as fair skin. The skin lightening industry is one of the world's fastest growing beauty segments and is forecast to be worth $31.2 billion by 2024, according to the World Health Organization. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. After thousands of businesses were forced to close following the strict lockdown brought on by the coronavirus pandemic, many assumed that it was the perfect time to file a business interruption insurance claim. Yet it might not be easy based on changes the insurance industry made after the 2002 SARS outbreak. Valentina Vasileva looked into the matter. Anna Rice narrates her story.
For example, this table gets seated. This table does not. This table does not get seated. This table does get seated.
People get seated checkerboard style. Only every other table can be occupied. The bar can accommodate four people instead of the usual 20. Like in other restaurants in the nation's capital, this venue can operate at only 50% capacity for indoor dining. That means profits get cut in half too. That after the restaurant was fully shut from March to June.
We laid some people off, we furloughed some people that went and got unemployment compensation, and now they're back. So we've got almost everybody back.
Owner of the restaurant Medium Rare, Mark Boucher, says the pandemic cost him hundreds of thousands of dollars. To try and compensate, Boucher got in touch with his insurance company, hoping the $25,000 he paid in insurance would pay off.
We, like many responsible business owners, filed a claim with our insurance company saying that our business has been interrupted due to circumstances beyond our control, and we're going to seek to the insurance company for reimbursement of lost sales and profits under the wording of our policy. It didn't take very long to get a letter back saying we're denying your claim. A pandemic or a virus is not a covered cause of loss.
Insurance companies changed their policies after the SARS outbreak that hit the world in 2002-2003, when insurance companies had to pay millions of dollars in compensation. Some added straightforward wording saying they're not covering losses because of a pandemic or virus outbreak. Others found more intricate wording, but to the same effect. Yet, independent experts say it all depends on how to interpret the contract.
That's the thing. If they're requiring physical loss only, then you're kind of stuck. But a good business interruption policy shouldn't have a physical loss requirement. Some of them, they don't have a direct physical loss requirement, but they're still using it anyway. They're adding it in as if it was there, and it's not.
However, insurance companies explained that the new policies were not adopted to get out of paying. They're simply trying to preserve the insurance industry. The U.S. has never seen such a massive disaster. The largest one before the pandemic was Hurricane Katrina that cost insurance companies $54 billion. The COVID-19 pandemic, according to the American Property Casualty Insurance Association, has led to monthly losses between about $250 and $430 billion monthly. This is more than half of all the money insurance companies have for covering future losses.
If a pandemic is specifically mentioned in the insurance contract, the number of insurance claims will be so large, it will surpass the amount these companies can pay.
Insurers say in a case like today's, it is the government that should support small businesses. Small business owners, on the contrary, are urging the government to change laws, making it impossible for insurance companies to evade paying in extraordinary circumstances like the current pandemic. For Valentina Vasileva in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Kenya-based reporter Ruud Elmendorp has been trapped in Tanzania for 4 months due to the coronavirus pandemic. The country on April 29th reported 509 confirmed cases of corona. No figures have been published since then. In June, Tanzania's president announced the country was corona-free, unlike countries surrounding Tanzania where the numbers are rising alarmingly. Ruud decided to do his own survey, and this is what he found.
I don't know how I did it, but I happen to be in the only country out of 188 that officially got rid of the coronavirus. This sanctuary on Mikadi Beach in Dar es Salaam has kept us safe from the coronavirus for the last 4 months because it's outside the urban area. But now that the government says the pandemic is officially over, I wonder what Dar es Salaam looks like. The first leap of faith is to take the ferry to the central business district. No face masks here, no distancing. Still, I am wearing a face mask and trying to keep some distance. This is the center of Dar es Salaam, and it looks just like it used to be before COVID, busy and full of activity. The people say there's no corona in Tanzania. The waitress says corona is in Italy and not Tanzania.
You know, if there's corona, it would unfortunately mean that vulnerable people die of it. So I decided to visit a few graveyards, but I didn't see any abnormal activities there. Also, I visited a hospital, but it was all normal operations. So what's going on in Tanzania?
Because in surrounding countries, the number of infections is rising alarmingly. Many people believe it is because of this magical brew developed in Tanzania. It is made of indigenous herbs, and according to the shopkeeper here, 3,000 bottles were sold in just a few days. So from what I see, it might actually be safe in Tanzania.
You know, at the beach lots we're staying, we didn't hear any cases of the staff being infected or their family members. So did Tanzania really do it? Did they manage to tackle the virus as the first country in the world? But according to a friend who works at the international organization, we still have to be careful. The virus is out there, so no more going to the disco.
While having an indigenous Tanzanian pilau, I listened to the address of the president of Kenya. He announced that on August 1st, the Kenyan skies will be open and that I can go home. Ruth Elmendorp for VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. If you've ever dreamed of having a digital clone do your work, a San Francisco tech firm may be able to help. The AI Foundation's mission is to help us each create our own digital replica. Matt Dibble reports.
Hello, I'm a digital version of Dr. Deepak Chopra. Soon, I can go with you everywhere you go. I'll be inside your phone, ready at any time to serve you.
Deepak Chopra, the alternative health guru, reaches millions with his books and television appearances. But you can't exactly call up the doctor when you need him. Introducing Digital Deepak, an artificially intelligent tool like Siri or Alexa, but with more personality. It has been trained by the real Deepak Chopra to converse and give guidance, much like he would. Built by the AI Foundation, Digital Deepak is a pioneer in what company CEO Lars Butler hopes will become a busy AI world.
Our mission is to build a better world by giving each of us our own AI that works exclusively for us.
You heard that right. A digital twin for all 7 billion of us. AI Foundation's Chief Technical Officer Rob Meadows explains.
We're not looking to replace people with AI. We're looking to give them an extension that can take their purpose, their mission, their ideas, their memories forward in time and out into the world in a bigger way. Your AI can go into the world and discover things or discover people that you don't have time or access to and bring these back to you.
At a youth summit, the company demonstrated personal AIs made with conference delegates, having conversations and learning from each other.
My name is Kim Hyuk Kim. I'm North Korean, and I'm determined to help spread democracy in my country.
Rob Meadows says the company, which is a hybrid nonprofit and for-profit venture, is serious about its goal of keeping the AI world safe and equitable.
It would be a shame if just a few people in the world ended up with the most powerful AI. That's the path we might be on right now in the world, and we're really looking to correct that.
Step aside, social media. Personal AI is coming. What will you do with yours? For VOA News, Matt Dibble, San Francisco.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao. And and our VOA Asia team that includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Stay safe, stay well, and enjoy your day.